Hello, you're listening to People, Pets, and Vets with Dr. Brad Miller and registered veterinary technician Angel Martin.
Hey, everyone.
Each week, we bring you current events and news in the veterinary industry and share our thoughts and perspective on how they impact us in our animal hospital. We also try to give you an insight and behind-the-scenes glance at our clinic and the people in it. This episode 134 is being brought to you once again by Georgia Veterinary Associates, a family of animal hospitals caring for your family pet. So, Angel.
Yes.
What's new?
So, there's a new study that came out that says, as we know, pets are really important to our lives, right?
Yep.
There is a new study that recently came out that said actually pets are better for cognitive brain function in humans. It's actually a recent study.
Okay.
And when I say pets, I think it's mostly dogs. I think that's what they studied. But there's a point in the article that says that owning a pet 5 years or more produced the most benefit by delaying cognitive decline by 1.2 points over a 6-year period of the study. So
did they list out reasons why they thought that improved those scores,
so,
like the interaction, the keeping the mind?
Just, it says that it's beneficial for working your verbal memory, I guess just decreasing that cognitive decline. I don't know. It's interesting.
Makes
sense. I'd like to read more of the white paper version than the CNN report on the article.
Right.
But still, we all get our news from news outlets for the most part. I certainly was not included on the study when it was produced, but I think it's very cool. It basically analyzed the cognitive data on more than 1,300 adults nationally. They were 50 years or older, though. But it was representative of all different types of demographics and that kind of thing. Different languages, they spoke to their pets.
Interesting.
There's a lot of talk in here about how dogs specifically can also understand words that aren't actual words, if that makes sense. So, nonsense words. And you've heard, we have a client that talks to her cat like a child, like a toddler, right? Like a TT and a ta-ta.
Yeah, you've talked about that before. Also, similar but different along those lines, people that speak a second language, right? And their dogs understand English, but
both.
Also commands in this one language, which makes sense, right? I mean, it's repetition. A two-year-old would be the same. A two-year-old kid would be the same.
Yeah.
You're a product of your environment. But it's always just kind of makes me, shake my head and ponder exactly what's going on in that dog's mind. Does it understand that there are two languages? Is it all the same? I would think they think it's all the same language. Right?
I mean,
dogs don't know there's English and German and Spanish and...
No, but I guess they don't know. They're not as cognitive as we are that they know, that there's different languages. But I think if you tell them sit or sientate, they understand, both with the same...
Seats. Yeah.
Yes.
They don't think, now they're speaking German.
It's like, okay, so all of these words mean the same thing to me. I should have the same outcome.
Yeah. Yeah. So you jumped right into the news stories.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
So I have another one related to pets, right? And somewhat, I don't have a political view or outlook or whatever, but also in kind of looking through and reading articles, there are many articles that are being published where refugees are leaving Ukraine. We all know what's kind of going on there. But they're not leaving their pets behind. They're actually taking their pets along with them and their belongings. And I think that's really indicative of really truly how socially we've changed as a being, right? Everyone is finding more comfort in pets.
Their companions, their pets.
They're not just leaving them behind.
Yeah, I mean, livestock they would leave behind unless they were like a source of milk or food, then they might try to bring them along. But yeah, to your point, it's not just here, it's everywhere. The
exactly.
role of pets has 100% changed. Compared to when I was, a young lad growing up. So
yeah, I mean, it's not to say that people still don't, pack up and leave their pets behind. I actually see it in rescue groups often, so-and-so got kicked out of their house or this house was condemned and they left the dog tied up outside. So those things still happen here.
They still happen
in other places.
Right?
Yeah, it's more commonplace that people are respecting and treating their pet as a true member of the family versus a being that lives outside, more of an animal. So remember, at the end of every podcast, we always say, without people, pets are simply animals.
Yeah.
And that is so, so true.
Yeah.
And we're seeing it more and more, right? Like, these people are truly bringing these animals in and making them pets.
So this story has probably no point, but it happened yesterday at the clinic. We were called by Fur Kids, coordinator at Fur Kids, to see if we could do a C-section or cesarean on a dog that was at a shelter, a local shelter. And so we said, yes, of course, you know, bring her in. If she needs to have that done, we'll do it. And so we were presented with maybe a 30, 35-pound, multiple mixed breed dog that was extremely pregnant. I mean, you're either are or not, I know, but late and really big in the abdomen.
Super big.
And we x-rayed her. She had, her name is Whitefoot, I believe.
Her name is Whitefoot?
Because she has four white feet. And so that's what they named her. But so we took an x-ray to see how many pups were there in the birth canal, you know, how big do we think the skulls were. Everything seemed okay, but she was reportedly in labor a couple of hours earlier. And so she was very manageable and sweet. We were able to get the catheter in, get her put under anesthesia. We did the C-section. All the pups lived. Yay. When she woke up, we started trying to get the pups to nurse on her, and she wanted nothing to do with them. And I think there's two reasons for that. Three reasons. Number one, she'd not had a litter before, I don't think. Number two, she didn't give birth naturally, so go through that process. But number three, she was kind of a street dog that was recently acquired by the shelter or animal control. And, you know, that had a little something to do with it. And so, again, I'm not really sure what the point of the story is, other than, you know, great job, Fur Kids, for stepping in and helping this mother dog, you know, birth the puppies via C-section. But it'll be interesting to see what happens with all these puppies and this particular dog. I guess the point is, she was not a quote-unquote companion or pet until now. Now she will be forced into that role, and hopefully she will appreciate that. So
I think that I'm a little distracted. I'm kind of, exactly. But no, my mom was actually here when that dog was going in for surgery. She was here with my cousin and her dog getting just an annual wellness exam. And I texted a picture of the dog on the surgery table to my mom, and she was like, whoa,
look at her.
What is that?
So here's a behind the scenes glance at what happens with the C-section in most every veterinary clinic.
But hold on one second. So I took the picture of the dog laying on the table on her back. Mm-hmm. And so her belly, if you just imagine kind of looking up from the feet towards the head, her belly was so big that you literally couldn't see the other side of the mm-hmm. dog past her belly.
Can you post that to Instagram?
I can, yeah.
Yeah. Did you take any pictures of the pups?
I did not.
They're still down there now.
They are.
So maybe if they're still here when we finish the podcast, we can take
pictures. There were 12 or 11?
10.
10. Okay, gosh. Yeah, I knew there was a lot.
10 or 11 on the x-ray.
On x-ray.
It wound up being 10. Reagan was right on that. So good job, Reagan. So little known fact, C-section. So the mama dog comes in. Staff gets really excited. We start getting ready to deliver pups and get them warm and get all the fluids out of their nose and take care of them and tie off their umbilical cord. So 4, 5, 6 staff members are around. We start the C-section. They're either in the OR or close by. Oh, they're excited. We're getting puppies. We're all hovering around the mama dog and the puppies. By the time you get to the last puppy, everybody is in another room with the puppies. And it's usually me and one assistant in the OR finishing up the surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody is smiling, laughing, applauding, clapping the mama dog. It's all about the puppies, right?
Oh,
so
yeah,
it's just
for
always
sure.
Kind of funny how everybody's in one room and then they switch to the other and all the focus. One of our employees, Lee, I was watching her yesterday. She was holding one of the pups for Dr. Hines to tie up the umbilicus. And I purposely was looking at her face because I don't know if she's ever even held a puppy that young,
like,
or
an
small
instant
before.
Newborn, yeah.
But the minute she held it, and I'm just looking straight on her face, you just started seeing this smile develop, and it got bigger and bigger and bigger. She was so happy holding that pup.
Aww.
It was kind of cute. So
yeah.
I didn't say anything. I didn't want to ruin her moment. Right?
No, but to your point, a behind-the-scenes thing is, like, when we do have a C-section like that, I mean, it's – It's similar but different, right? So when you are a human being, and I've never delivered or had a C-section or whatever, but like I see it on TV, and there's this whole team of people all about this one child and the mother, whether or not it's a cesarean or not. And here it's like we're gonna have 10 puppies, so we have to have a team of people, at least one person per pup, to make sure that they are breathing and that there is a heartbeat and so on and so forth. So it truly does take majority of our staff
Takes a team,
here.
but as a surgeon, it's always really lonely after the pups are delivered. You're just down there, and
Aw,
everybody
sad.
is, yeah.
You have a very important job though.
Yeah. So, anyway, so that's that story. We have another, speaking of fur kids, they took in another dog. Fur Kids, by the way, Atlanta, Georgia, awesome rescue organization. Furkids.org, I believe, is the
That's
website.
correct.
We've been working with them for years and years, and they do a lot of really great things for both dogs and cats. So if anybody is interested in volunteering or donating, they always are accepting those two things. So
Yep, for sure.
a doodle is here named Earl. Earl is probably, have you seen Earl?
I have seen Earl. He's the puppy, yeah.
So yeah, he is apricot, would you call him?
Yeah, apricot, red,
And
something like that.
probably apricot or apricot?
Apricot.
Apricot, okay. Tomato, tomato. He's probably 12 weeks old.
Oh, I was gonna say like 9 to 11-ish,
Let's call
yeah.
him 10. Let's call him 10 then.
Okay, great. Woo.
And so anyway, he is a suspected mega esophagus patient, dilated esophagus, and those pets typically tend to regurgitate food because their esophagus just doesn't work properly to move food down from the oral cavity down into the stomach. And so we've been kind of working with him and working him up. We actually scoped him yesterday. We've done barium swallows, just trying to evaluate that. And we think it's more of a transient mega esophagus. And so hopefully this is something that will somewhat correct itself. But we still don't really know because it's not a vascular ring anomaly to where there's a stricture over the base of the heart on the esophagus causing it. And really, he's so young. I don't know that I've ever diagnosed megaesophagus in a patient this young. So,
So can we talk about this patient just
work in
briefly
progress
in the
on the
sense that
diagnostics.
like it's not often that purebred or quote unquote
Designer type, yeah.
intentionally bred animals are turned over to a rescue group, but that is my understanding with this dog.
The
The
owner of
breeder.
the litter, yes, knew that there was a problem, and I'm not gonna pass judgment on the owner.
No.
This pet was not going to be sellable, and I'm assuming they did not want to keep it, and so Fur Kids did step in to try to help with the
Yeah.
medical care and ultimately find that dog a home, right?
So, yes, and I guess kind of where I was going is that I have no qualms with the breeder kind of surrendering this dog to a rescue, because a lot of times with breeders who are breeding like absolute purebred dogs, if there is a genetic dysfunction or whatever in the breed, that pet is usually terminated, and then the breeding of the two parents is also restricted moving forward.
Right.
And so, taking care of a dog with mega esophagus is a huge
Boy,
responsibility.
that's, yeah,
Not to
that's.
mention that this dog, if he grows to be his normal size, he's going to be over 50 pounds. And then how do you get a dog like that to sit in a Bailey chair? It's
What's a
difficult.
Bailey chair? So let's educate the
So
listeners.
we'll get there in just a second, but I commend the breeder for realizing that it's not a task that she wanted to take on or he or she wanted to take on, but that there are other people out there who would.
We've had staff members adopt mega esophagus patients, and we have cautioned them
It's a
on
hard, hard
the
job.
not only the responsibility but the heartbreak that they're going to probably experience because these pets just, try as you may, they just typically don't do well because
Yeah, they certainly don't live their life
and
expectancy.
the big reason for that is as they regurgitate this fluid, this food up into their oral cavity from their esophagus, then they often will aspirate that down into their lungs and develop pneumonia. And so we start getting these chronic, recurrent pneumonias that become resistant to antibiotics because of just the longevity there.
Yeah,
So
no, it's
kind of
pretty
sick.
sad. So to your point, right? So regurging. So think of your esophagus as a tube going from your mouth to your stomach. And ideally, it's a strictured tube or with rugae, I guess. Is that really what it's called?
Not rugae.
That's
gonna
in
be
your
in the
stomach.
Stomach. But it's gonna have muscle. It's gonna have
so it
smooth
essentially
muscle that's gonna move.
Tries
Yeah.
to move the food
From the
down.
mouth. Yep.
So gravity, because we are a two-legged creature, gravity kind of helps us in that regard as well. But when you're a dog and you're on all four, gravity is not essentially
Yeah.
your friend.
Lateral. Yeah.
So your esophagus essentially is wider or bigger than it should be, mega esophagus, and so it doesn't help the food go down into the stomach. And so what you're saying is that they're regurging the food back up into their oral cavity. So a Bailey chair is meant to be a restraint, I guess, for a pet, a dog specifically. I don't know that cats, I've ever seen a cat in a Bailey chair, but dogs specifically,
Sure, it's
so that
happened,
it
yeah.
keeps them vertical. And so
I think the best way for me to describe what this looks like, it's going to be the wooden
high chair.
Infant high chairs that are in restaurants
Yep.
that your kid, your two-legged kid, sits in. The pet sits in a very similar fashion.
The
And
dog
actually,
is going to sit on his rump.
Apparatus is, excuse me, very similar. It's just that it has, like, they typically have solid sidewalls to keep them, you know, in that position. So you can build it yourself. I'm sure people sell them.
Oh, yeah, I'm
not
sure.
people, but, yeah, companies sell them. So, but, yeah, those are used just to help the food and or water go
Go
down,
down.
You know, from up to down. So,
yep.
So with Earl, Earl kind of has a transient megaesophagus. We did some barium. It was really big. There was no apparent vascular ring anomaly over the heart base causing that. We took follow-up x-rays at one point, then the esophagus is normal. Yesterday we did a flexible endoscopy. We looked to make sure there was not a stricture over the heart base, which there was not. The esophagus yesterday was normal size when we put the scope down. And then the one thing I wanted to really look at, it was his lower esophageal sphincter. So that's the sphincter or valve, if you will, going from the esophagus into the stomach, because Fur Kids has presented us with a couple of patients in the past that that sphincter was not developed. And so I wanted to make sure that was okay, which it was. And so the reason I bring that up, the day before yesterday, an article came out that a group, I don't even remember where they were out of, but a couple of doctors were studying the effects of Viagra on megaesophagus, and the conclusion was it may be very effective on many of these patients with megaesophagus.
The study was animal related, or it was
animal
in
related.
Humans?
So
okay.
It was an N or number of animals of 10 that they studied, and they gave liquid Viagra or sildenafil to these pets prior to feeding or giving them water. And I believe it was, I meant to print it out, but I believe 30 to 60 minutes after administering Viagra, it opened up or dilated the lower esophageal sphincter to let the food or water or whatever substance go down into the stomach.
Interesting.
And then the esophagus went ahead and constricted again. Mm-hmm. And so I just think that's kind of cool.
It is very cool.
It's kind of cool. We also use Viagra for pulmonary hypertension.
Yes.
And I heard not too long ago, and maybe that's what the drug was, maybe that's the original intent of the drug, and then the secondary effect is for, well, we all know what the secondary effect of
ED is, all we'll call it.
Viagra is. But so that, I don't know, I just thought that was really cool, and that kind of hit home because of Earl being in the house. So if Earl continues to have problems, that's something that we probably will try.
So I find Earl's name interesting, that it's Earl, but someone made a comment yesterday that we're seeing lots and lots of pets with these older human names, which, you know, to each their own or whatever, but what really kind of caught me is that we have some colleagues in Savannah, and I got a text message from one of them, and they had a picture that we had posted on our Facebook page, which we do often, right? So anytime we have a new puppy or kitten come into the practice, we make them like a little sign.
Right.
And we stole that idea from like all the little kids who start elementary school, and it says like, first day of first grade, I'm 6 years old, and when I grow up, I want to be a veterinarian, right? So like we kind of stole that. And so our sign basically says, like, my first vet visit, I'm, you know, X number of weeks old, I weigh this much, and whatever. So I got a picture from one of our colleagues in Savannah and was like, oh my gosh, I love this idea. Where did you guys get that board? Well, we made it.
Right.
We made one for all of our practices. But I did not see the dog when it came in or the board, but the dog's name was Roger. And I just think that's hysterical.
Roger.
So we've got Earl and Roger. Those are just like two names that are very, in my opinion, like they're older generation, like male names. Like you just don't hear someone call their pet Roger. You don't hear people name their kids Roger anymore. You certainly don't find an Earl.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just
Angel,
funny.
Hold that thought.
Okay.
We're going to pick up here in just a minute, but it's going to roll into episode 135. So we'll sign us out, and then we'll jump right back into that that commentary.
Check in next week as we discuss more in the news and in our industry. Make sure to follow us on Instagram at People, Pets, and Vets, where you can get all the pictures and the things that we talk about on the show. Follow all of our clinics on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Check out our blogs on our website at mygavet.com. Please hit subscribe wherever you're listening to this podcast. And remember, without people, pets are simply animals.
Oh, gosh.